Ja.
We all know that the IPL is the biggest event in the world cricketing circuit today. So much so that there are even speculations that the ICC Cricket World T20, which is supposed to be held this year, was kept aside to pave way for the IPL to go ahead. We also know that it started in 2008 and literally changed the face of Indian cricket forever. But what really were the events which led to the start of such an iconic cricket tournament? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cricket Unplugged, where we talk about the game of glorious uncertainties. In the last episode, we talked about the Challenger Series, a pretty iconic series which is held no more. In today's episode, we will be talking about another series which was filled with controversies, had a much, much higher impact. Eventually had to be brought down, but most importantly, it paved way for the biggest game-changing tournament in the history of Indian cricket, which is the Indian Premier League. Yes, guys, we are today talking about the Indian Cricket League. So the Indian Cricket League, to give you a small intro, it was a private cricket league and it was funded by the Zee Sports, the Zee Entertainment Enterprises. That operated between 2000 and 2007 and 2009 in India. So it was a tournament which was basically played out of the T20 format. Yes, they also had one tournament which was held in the 50 over format, and it basically consisted of cricketers from all around the world, and especially the Indian players, of course, who were not in the first 14 or 15, if you want to call it. So when I talk about foreign players, I'm talking about players like Brian Lara, Michael Bevan, Maro Natapatu, of the like. So they had a fantastic tournament in the setup in 2007, and then in 2008 it even extended even more with the incoming of the World 11. Cricket League was a bit of a phenomenon. So, what really happened? What was the history of this tournament? So, to give you a brief about this, Zee Studios really wanted to have the lucrative deal of telecasting cricket, which happened in India, which they could not really convert. So what they did is, Subhash Chandra, what he did is he thought that he could bring a series which is pretty similar to the cricket, the other sports leagues, for example, if you want to call it, which was never really started off in cricket. Now, of course, we have every country has such a thing, but in 2007 it was a new thing. So he started off such a tournament called as ICL. It wasn't really with the blessings of the BCCI. He actually thought that he could run something. He could run almost a board in parallel with them. So there was a lot of friction in between. And that's how it started off. And of course, when you are running your horses against the BCCI and ICCI, it does not really go so far. And that's how it could not go much. So Raghav, I'm sure you'll give us more details regarding the same, all the legal issues, what happened, the Zee Telefilms, and the new cricket coming into play, and then even them politicizing it with pawning Sharad Pawar against the Jagmohan Dalmia and all of those political dramas. Yes, Raghav.
Yeah, so first of all, it's pretty nice to go back to that tournament through this episode because it was actually a fun-filled tournament while it was being played for a brief span of 2 years. So just to go back in time, so in 2000, as is said in the prelude to this, so as an introduction to this episode, Subhash Chandra wanted to get the telecast rights of the 1999 cricket World Cup. And at that time, it went to World Sports Corporation. So that was later bought over by SAR Network. And then, so his grudge with the BCCI started almost before 2000 itself, when he lost out that tournament. Then in 2003, the fresh rights for Indian telecasting rights were opened. First bids were opened. He apparently bid for in 2003 for a price of $510 million. But in the last minute, BCCI found some accounting and auditing issues with the Z group of companies, and they disqualified his bid. And that then again slipped out of his hand, only for him to, as you brought up the point, Sarath Pawar. So Sarath Pawar was the BCCI president in 2005-8, I think, in that 3 or 4 year period. So in that stage, he wanted to take revenge. He was sole purpose of Subhash Chandra's existence at that time, in the cricket world at least, was to take revenge against the BCCI. So he pitted Sarath Pawar against Jagmohan Dalwe, and he put all his might in ensuring Sarath Pawar becomes the BCCI president, which he ended up becoming. He also went one step further. He went and proposed Sarath Pawar's name for ICC president as well, which also is a post which Sarath Pawar held for a period of 2 years, 2 to 3 years. So Subhash Chandra was a big force in Sarath Pawar's rise in the cricket circles. So in that phase, with all the legal and everything else cleared, he was set to take over and get the lucrative Indian cricket telecasting rights deal in 2006-2007, only for some legal issues which happened in 1996. So as far as one article which I read, so I'm not sure if it's exactly true, but it says that there are some issues on a personal front. So they actually didn't disqualify him, but BCCI went ahead and considered Nimbus Sport, which later became Neo Sports, as the front runner, whereas Z Corp was actually at number one in terms of the value they put in. But they gave Neo Sports the deal, and Neo Sports got so that was the last straw. So once you do all the possible things you can to come into power and get such a deal, Subhash Chandra he decided to take ultimate revenge. And as he was probably, I would say, inspired by Kerry Packer's World Series in 1984-85. So he decided to run a parallel cricket board of his own. And that's how this tournament was created, which actually, if you notice, in that time, when he started the tournament, there was no ICC World T20, there was no Dhoni, there was no glory for India in the World T20, which followed the inception of IPL. There was no T20 cricket as such. It was just coming up in international circuit in England and in Australia. They just started to add that to the calendars at that stage. So he was actually a revolutionary of sorts, I would call him, because he noticed the huge business potential in T20 cricket, and he wanted to create a huge league. And to his credit, he actually did that for a period of 2 years, and he was able to convince some of the brightest stars, as well as some people, some really well-known and respected names like Nathan Astill, Chris Kane's, Inzuma Moolak, Brian Lara, yes, Marwan Atapattu. To be fair, some of them were at the fag end of their careers, so I think they didn't have much to lose by joining this league. But still, to give due credit where you have to give it, I guess, to Subhash Chandra, he was able to bring in the names. It was not just some league. It had the names. You had people you follow in international cricket playing in a fancy T20 league. It was something very new. So I remember it definitely caught my attention, although I didn't follow it match by match, but definitely I was watching the tournament. I don't think I need to be apologetic or to say sad about watching the tournament, because it was good cricket. It was not one-sided. There were some pretty close games. So,
yes.
Yeah, but this was a clear vendetta. So, which was why ISL started, and I think, as you perfectly put it, once you're pitted against BCCI and ICC, who are not going to give their support for this tournament, your existence is almost written when it starts, basically. So he was actually lucky to have it for the second year, is what I feel. 1 year was taking it too far, but lucky for them, but not for the players, that it lasted for 2 years.
Yes, Raghav. So that was some interesting stream of events which led to the start of the Indian Cricket League and, of course, the sudden and quick demise of the same. But I would rightly agree with you while saying that definitely there was no need to be apologetic, because for us cricket fans, it was the first time that we ever had a tournament where your city was being represented by multiple other people, especially from Australia, England, New Zealand. We had all those cricketers. And I, for one, was definitely a huge fan of the Chennai Superstars. They were a fantastic team. So just like the Chennai Super Kings, they were probably the most consistent team in the ICL. They won the first ICL hands down, and then the first 50-over version of the same, they won it. In the other two versions, once they lost in the semifinals, and the other time they ended as the runners-up. So they were always there. They had a fantastic team, and Stuart Law, Ian Harvey, Michael Bevan, to name a few of the foreign stars. Later on, Rajagopal Satish later on represented Bombay for the Mumbai Indians, in fact. So he played a few matches for them, but he was a really, really good star, that guy. He played some wonderful knocks, in fact. And Chennai Superstars, of course, they won the first tournament, and one innings which really I remember was it was actually in the 50 over format of the tournament. So in the finals, Chennai Superstars were chasing something like 240 odd to win, and then they were very much on the ropes. And then finally, it all boiled down to a fantastic innings from this ex-Indian fast bowler named Thirunavagar Sukumaran. So he scored a 30-odd of very little balls, and that really paved way for a victory. So if it was some sort of an international tournament, or you know, any 50 other tournament which is recognized, that would have been a fairy tale innings. And
yes.
At the same time, in the very first final of the ICL tournament in 2007, Stuart Law and Ian Harvey, they both played some really good innings, which helped us win. And of course, from the bowling front, this Pakistani bowler Shabbir Ahmed really did the game for Chennai Superstar. So these are all fond memories which I've had, you know, in the tournament. Also, I remember Brian Lara playing a few games. He was not really, I would say he was not really making a huge statement in the tournament. It was more in the fag end of his career. had actually he had even retired from international cricket by then, but even his presence was there. Do you remember any such fond instances of the same? Did you have any team which you supported?
Yeah, I did. I have a lot of fond memories of the tournament. Although while watching the tournament, I never supported any team because, as you rightly said, there was no tournament of that sort before the ISL came up. So although it was slightly easy for you because there's a team from Chennai, so there was no team from Bangalore. So I didn't know who to support. So I just looked at the players, which I actually do even now. Even for when the IPL happens, I don't support RCB in the IPL just because they're from Bangalore. So I don't have that kind of a supporting system or technique. I look at the players who are part of a team and then I support them. So in that logic, the team which caught my eye and which bemuses me now, all these years when we went back to look about this tournament for this episode, I am shocked to see some of the names in this team, and that's Lahore Badshahs. So they always caught my fancy when they played a tournament in 2008. Uh-huh. But the names, if you look at the people who are part of the team, it was captained by Inzamam Ulhaq, and it had batsmen like Mohammad Yusuf, Imran Farhad, Imran Nazir. They could have taken away the World T20 in 2007 from India. So, yeah. And he had some outstanding ballers like Mohammad Sami, who has 230 international wickets. Then he had a fantastic all-rounder in Azhar Mahmood. Then you have Ashraf Khan, who I think in one of the previous episodes, I clearly mentioned that he was somebody who comes to my mind when you look at somebody who didn't get his due, because he had Saqlain Mushtaq and Mushtaq Ahmed taking all the limelight, followed by Syed Sair Ajmal. But he was right in between all the three. A tall, lanky spinner. He almost reminds me of a right-handed version of Sunamon Bin of West Indies. Like, absolutely, you cannot believe a guy who is so tall and built will just come, not even run almost, just walk. And I clearly remember Arshad Khan's action. It was hop, skip, and then probably a jump kind of thing. There's no run up as such. So, but he could really ball well. And I've seen him live as well in the 2007 Test match, India Pakistan Test match in Bangalore. So I actually saw all this live at the Chinnaswamy Stadium. So I clearly remember Ashraf Khan toiling away, and they didn't have any other spinner in that game. So he was only spinner bowling from one end. So there's some amazing, there is probably somebody who I'm sure many people would remember for his match fixing and other controversy, but Rana Nawidul Hasan. But I think there's one specific incidents why I remember his name more, because he got tongued the most by India. So whenever he played, especially by Sehwag. So I clearly remember his name. So in particular, if you have to ask me, I don't remember any clear game or performance that comes to my mind. But from this tournament's perspective, like you said, this team caught my attention the most. Because first of all, if you look at the context, you have a Pakistani team playing in an Indian tournament, you can say, Indian T20 tournament. So that itself piqued my interest 13 years back. So because I was surprised that there could be a Pakistan team. I was at most, to be very honest, I was expecting a World 11 kind of a team where they would take 3-4 Pakistan players who are going to retire or already call quits. So just to make a show that we are trying to be inclusive sort of a thing. But to have a team like this, it was definitely enough for me to not become a fan as such, but I was watching their games, I remember. So I don't remember, as I said, any performance. But then other teams, for sure, I remember Ian Harvey, then Justin Kemp, and Chris Keynes, and his controversial statements which he made. And if I think we forgot to mention one of the greatest, what do you call, sadness when it comes to some players who are such so good, but they didn't make it longer. Shane Bond. So he was also part of the Mumbai Champions. So amazing talents. It's not just, as we call the fringe players of every international team piled up and thrown in into a tournament. They are players who could win games on their own merit in the international scene across formats. Not just T20, across formats. Chris Keynes could win a test match. And he has won many test matches on his own. So there's a clear case of the flair and the talent which Lahore Badshahs produced, which made me... Yeah, then, of course, there are, I would say they are the most luckiest team in terms of impact post the ISL got banned. Because 90% of the players who are part of this squad either played for Pakistan or are still around in the first class circuit. So I think that is one thing which is good as well for them compared to the other teams. So yes, Lahore Badshahs for me, I would say, is a team from ICL.
Wonderful, wonderful, Rakam. So we have also mentioned about why it actually came into existence. From the business perspective, but let's talk a bit from the player's perspective. So as you rightly put, the ICL had a huge sect of players who were able to win not just T20s but test matches by themselves, and players who have done so. You're talking about the greatest ODI finisher of all time, Michael Bevan. Then you're talking about probably the greatest Kiwi fast bowler never to be, Shane Bond. And you're talking about arguably the greatest left-handed batsman in Test cricket, Brand Lara. So you had all these greats. At the same time, you had these Pakistani players, you had Bangladeshi players, and then you had the so-called fringe players, like, as I mentioned, Rajagopal Satish, and Thirunalkar Sukumaran. And all the... Jay Prakash Yadav, let's say, was another all-rounder in the long list of people tested by India during that period from 2005 to 2010, during that period when they were searching for a wicketkeeper batsman. They lucked out with Dhoni, you know, for more than a decade they got him. And testing for an all-rounder kept on, and Jay Prakash Yadav was one of those. Then he stopped and they came back. We also had Hemang Badani in it and Rohan Gavaskar. So clearly, there were many prominent faces who played for India who actually opted to come and play for the ICL, you know, knowing that it is a series which might be against the views of BCCI and the ICC, but they still did. Now, what could be the reason for them doing that, and have those spots been covered? Of course, with the IPL, definitely... a great deal of players are getting a much higher exposure to the game in its highest format yet. But what could have been the reasons for them to come here, and what are the repercussions of such a thing? And also to add on to that, we heard Suresh Raina saying that people who are not in the first contract of players of the BCCI, they should be allowed to play foreign league. So yes. Another such double thing might also happen. What do you think?
So in my opinion, it is a clear-cut case of players who knew that they were not exactly banging the doors of national selection, especially when it comes to Indian players who opted to join the I see it. So look at JP Yadav, Rohan Gavaskar. He was part of the 2003-04 series to Australia. He didn't do much. So, and then Hemant Badani, to be fair, at that time was at the fag end of his career. So there are a lot of players who didn't have a pedestal like the IPL now. So at that time, we need to again re-emphasize to who all are going to be listening to this podcast that that time when we are talking is 2006, 7, 8. There was no IPL. So there was no backup for these players. So they were either in contention for the national team or they were slogging their ass off in the Ranji Trophy, tirelessly scoring runs, taking wickets, but not able to make it to the Indian team. So they saw this as a great avenue where they could earn good money and hopefully, because the rift between Subhash Chandra and BCCI went into court only in 2008, 2007-8. So the first season was actually fairly less controversial than the second. So they actually probably would have felt this tournament could have propelled them to national glory. And to be fair, it's not wrong on them, I would say. I mean, how long would you try to buy back national selection only not to get picked? So that was one thing, and the clear-cut case where if you don't have support of BCCI, you are going to get into severe trouble, and that's what happened to the players who are part of the ICL. So after the legal mess got sorted out, BCCI decided to reprimand 71 players part of ICL, but there are actually 130 plus players who joined the ICL. From Indian perspective, so the BCCI did a case by case study and allowed only 71 to get back into the first class circuit again. And only two players come to my mind who made it to the Indian team post being part of ICL are Ambati Raidu and Stuart Binnie. And Stuart Binnie, I don't want to waste my time talking about him, but Ambati Raidu is certainly somebody who was, I would say, unfairly left out of the 2019 World Cup squad. So he could at least been part of the squad is what I felt. But he was doing good. So here's a success story of somebody who took the plunge, went to the ICL, got banned, served his ban, and then came back into the Ranji scene, scored runs, and then was picked for India. But there are not many people as lucky as him. Take, for instance, the Bangladesh team. So, as you rightly said, there was World 11, Bangladesh 11, India, and Pakistan 11. So, Bangladesh 11, the people who played for Bangladesh 11, all players were banned from playing any form of cricket for 10 years. So, he had somebody like Aftab Ahmed. I'm sure you will remember him. He's an opening batsman. Extremely talented. He was touted to be the next Mohammad Ashraful in the early 2000s. And he was part of the famous win in Cardiff when Bangladesh beat Australia in the NATO series. This is just a few weeks before the epic 2005 Ashes series started in England. So in that tournament, Aftab Ahmed and Mohammad Ashraful were the champions for Bangladesh in that series of 257, where Aftab Ahmed hit 63, I think, I don't remember exactly, but he was a star for them in Bangladesh circles. Certainly, he was a star. He had the talent. So, including him, there were some severe ban being put. Mohammad Rafiq is one player who also was part of this league. So, he was their frontline left-arm spinner. So, they were banned from playing any form for 10 years. Pakistan also banned the players for about 3 to 5 years, and then they actually revoked the ban. I'm not sure about the story from a Pakistan point of view. From Bangladesh, I am clearly can say that they were robbed of some serious talent. So I don't know why they did it from a Bangladesh point of view. Only reason which comes to my mind now is the financial. If you throw $1 million contract or something in that range to a young Bangladesh lad who's promising, I'm sure he'll take that over playing for his country, especially when you look at Bangladesh in the early 2000s. They are not winning anything. They are not even a competition, in my opinion. Now they are a competition, and they are actually much more than that. If you look at their one-day T20 team, so this is completely different Bangladesh 10 years back. So I don't blame them, but they knew what they are going into. So they are not getting into ISIL blindfolded by saying, no, they will take me back. I'm sure they realize there's something horrible coming their way. But 10 years was a bit too harsh. But yeah, that's how it is. And you had many players who, I would say 3-4 of them, like India Mersertiv, Rajgopal, Satish, Abu Nasim Ahmed, one fast bowler, extremely talented fast bowler. Then he had Justin Kim from South Africa and Ian Harvey. So these four players I would specifically put because they were at the peak of their form when it comes to cricket in terms. Justin Kim captained South Africa in the 2020. And then he went to the ICL. So I don't know what's wrong with him actually now. If you look at it, why did he do that? I'm not sure. But they are at peaking. So there's a peak for every sportsman and every cricketer. It happens at different stages for each player. So these four names, why I brought them up was they were peaking at the time they reached ICL. So they had fantastic ICLs. But sadly, they are not banned by the cricket boards. So they went back into the first class circuit, but they never made it back. Justin Kim came back and he was a lame duck. He was a easily hittable bowler in the South African batting lineup, which was completely one-dimensional in 2007-8, which had the likes of Pollock, McIntyre, Andrew Hall, Andre Nil, and then Justin Kim. Everybody is right-hand medium fast. There's no dimensional attack. So you had carriers being robbed almost. Where they're at their best in a tournament which nobody wants to talk about even in a jest or in a joking matter, because it's almost a taboo now, ICL, in my opinion. So sad. So repercussion, that would be the most sad in my opinion. When you see people like Chris Cairns, Justin Kemp, Satish, it's a big loss. They could have done better, I felt, post the ICL. To at least make a mark. I don't know. Rajgopal Satish, I do remember him playing for Mumbai Indians, but he was a far cry from what he was in the ICL, to be fair. He was much better. He could have made it to the India team. So, this is a sad thing that their best cricket happened in this tournament, but I guess it is. That's how it is, I think. So, some people do want to break away from the norm, I guess. So, these are the brave. The people did that at that time. Unfortunate for them that they didn't know what was coming up. Because if they knew that IPL was coming up, I don't think any of the big stars would have shown interest. How much our money Subhash Chandra would have thrown at them? I don't think they would have come to the ICL. But as I said, ICL was much before IPL. So you cannot exactly put complete onus on these players. But some of them, Aftab Ahmed or Imran Nazir for that matter. Yeah, he was at his best 2004-7. I don't know why he took a jump to go and play in ICL. He could have easily still be playing. I think he was around 18 or 19, I'm not sure, when the ICL was happening. He could have still been playing and probably be a opener or a middle order batsman now. Probably he is an amazing talent. So I'm actually almost thinking in my mind, Babar Azam on one end and Imran Nazir on the other. If only Imran Nazir had used his brain and not gone to the. I said he could have been that person. So Pakistan, who needs somebody in the middle order, especially in Mondays, who can accelerate as well as probably control the innings. Imran Nazir had that. Imran Farhat as well, actually. Very good opening batsman. Just carriers robbed her. Carriers, everything robbed just because they went to ICL. So tough, very tough on the players, but they knew what they were getting into. So I would say that is a way to end this, I think. They knew what they were getting into. So you cannot sympathize with them as well. So.
No, absolutely. Tonight, rightly put up points. Yeah, Raghav. Through the ICL has been a really game-changing series, to be fair. As we mentioned, it also gave the birth for the IPL. Also, it really gave us a glimpse of what a global tournament like ICL can really give in terms of exposure to the youngsters. Of course, they did not see the Nostradamus card. They could not foresee what was coming with the IPL. And definitely, if they knew that, they would have kept their instincts back and really waited for the big thing to happen. But yes, that's sometimes how things go in life, isn't it? You never really cannot predict what might happen in the future, and more often than not,
exactly,
left wondering what could have been if we did not quite do it. So I think it's a fantastic part talking about this forgotten league, the Indian Cricket League, and just like our previous episode about the champions, I mean the champion series. So I really hope for the next pod also we can bring in something which is really interesting at the same time, quite forgotten too. Any closing comments, Raghav?
Yeah, what I would say is, like, for people who I think who became fans of cricket post the emergence of the IPL, they need to understand that IPL was not exactly Narendra Modi's brainchild. So it
Absolutely.
Was a creation of ICL meets NFL plus NBA. If you look at the auctioning, player auction system, bringing in private companies and bringing in your Bollywood stars to own teams. So it's a mix of glamour, entertainment, or as they call it, cricketainment. So that's a perfect example of IPL, or perfect way to describe IPL. But we must not forget what ICL actually did. So that's how I would like to end it, by saying that ICL actually brought about few positive changes which actually woke up BCCI, which was in slumber in 2006, 2007, 2008, that phase, because they had the money even then as they do now. So they have complete control of the world cricket now. But they were, I would say, a very big force even in 2007-8. So they could have started something like this even before the ICL came about. So I think they realized that if a person like Subhash Chandra, with very little support from BCCI and ICC, would get greats like Nizam Ulhaq, Brian Lara, Shane Bond, Parvan Attapattu, and many other unknown upcoming stars to be part of a privately owned T20 tournament, why can't we do it? So that seed of IPL came through ICL. So people may not want to accept it, but that's a fact. That is a clear fact. And one more important thing which has changed Indian cricket, apart from, of course, the IPL and its popularity, the exposure which IPL brings in. So that is obvious facts. But the other very important thing, which I would like to close this very good episode, I would say, on ICL, on the topic of ICL, is the fact that ICL brought in a much more balanced pay structure in Indian cricket, which was missing
Absolutely.
before the ICL started. So I think we need to give credit to the ICL for making sure that people who don't play for India or who are only Ranji stars, even they get a good amount of money. And annually, that was a byproduct of what ICL offered to these players. So I think it's a good way to end by saying that, yes, ICL was doomed from the start because it didn't get the support of BCCI or the ICC. So it was bound to happen that they are going to fade away. They lasted for 2 years, but I would say take the positives as what I have clearly put out here. There are two clear positives. And I think we need to look at how it happened, I think, as you call it. When you look back on hindsight, we can say people could have done things this, that. But of course, now we have the IPL. And for people who are looking and who are desperate in need of some cricket because they don't find test cricket worth their time, even during the lockdown situation and the pandemic, I don't see much interest in England-West Indies test series apart from the first game maybe. So for people who are desperate for IPL, you can expect IPL to happen soon. So I think those people can cheer up and and probably go back and maybe read about the ICL after this episode. So I would say that's why I'll end it here.
Exactly. There are no ifs and buts in the game of cricket nor in life. I think the Indian Cricket League was a tournament which exemplifies that dialogue in both the aspects. Thank you, Raghav. It was amazing having this conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a great time. Yeah. Thanks.